And when Becket became Archbishop, he step by step had to undeceive the king to make it clear to him that he wouldn't and couldn't play this role. And in the process, one can see, I think, why it was that Henry was so completely disillusioned, because Becket had honestly and honourably tried to be both Archbishop's man and King's man when he was Chancellor. It was bound to seem to the king, looking back, that if Becket as Archbishop could prove so different from how he remembered him as Chancellor, that he must in some way have been playing a game with him, have been deceiving him. And it's this which made Henry so deeply disillusioned.
That was the end of a beautiful friendship. And as so often happens, a great love became a great hate. And those two loathed each other as much as they loved each other.
And the combination of those two controversies between the king and the archbishop and between Becket's past and his present brought about the clash. Becket was not a saint like Anselm, not so to say a saint from birth or a saint from baptism or even a saint from an early conversion. And in a sense, he never became a saint till he was martyred.
The particular points about the church on which he was stubborn were of limited ecclesiastical interest. But in making a strong stand on those points, he was felt to be resisting the growing absolutism of sovereigns. And for that reason, I think Becket had far more general popular support, giving an impression that he was on the side of the underdog, than the particular issues, strictly speaking, may have merited.
Not a saint, certainly extremely able, but unable to compromise, and so was Henry. It was a head-on collision.
Beyond that point, Henry regards Becket as traitor.
Who can estimate what lies in the heart of another man? Did my actions as Chancellor bespeak my mind? Some men think and act as they think. Their life is the mirror of their intention. Harry is such a man. Others, constrained by the circumstance, think one way and act another. The reins of office are harnessed not to their deepest intent, but to their worldly abilities. Thomas Becket was such a man. When the king judged me fit for his archbishop, he judged me a chess piece never to move off the prescribed diagonal he ordained. But God's man is subject to a higher ordinance, as is the king. In the game of life, as in the game of chess, the king himself, arrogantly surveying the checkerboard of his kingdom and plotting his puny moves, is subject to the prime mover of the heavens. And in our Lord's game, a bishop or even a pawn can checkmate a king. While I live, Henry, even though in exile, your game is not won. Holy Mary, Mother of God, I can see only downward. Raise me, that I may direct my gaze upward, for the iniquities are gone over my head and they engulf me.
By the eyes of God, Becket!
I mean, Your Grace, this mocks law and order. Philippe de Bras murdered a knight. He admits it now, and what justice? That fool, the Bishop of Lincoln, exonerated him on compurgation. Philip found 12 friends to swear they thought him innocent, and an assassin goes free because years ago he was in orders.
I remind your majesty that the 12 were under oath, and perjury would banish their immortal souls from heaven.
Of course. But how am I to maintain my peace when every murdering monk is outside my jurisdiction?
There have been over 100 murders by clerks this far under my rule, and they've all walked away from the ecclesiastical court, free to indulge in rape, murder, arson, while in our court we blind and mutilate a man for killing a deer.
I remind your majesty that jurisdiction over all members of the clergy was granted the church by his majesty's illustrious predecessor, William of Normandy, and that his majesty was not unwilling to recognize the validity of the conqueror's grants in the matter of Battle Abbey.
And I remind your grace that a certain chancellor drew these charters to the royal attention and advised how best they might serve the royal purpose. Also, I remind your grace that ancient custom shows that in practice, William never relinquished his prerogative and always usurped his own concessions if the church failed to administer justice to the benefit of the realm. Our concern is justice and the protection of the realm.
And our concern is the protection of God's realm.
Oh, come on, Tommy. You know as well as I do that you're protecting murderers and felons.
We flogged him publicly, sire.
Oh, and I'm supposed to be pleased? The man murders one of my knights. You exonerate him, refuse to surrender him to my court, and flog him for abusing a king's officer. Oh, ho, ho, you're on thin ice.
No man can be tried twice for the same crime.
He was ever tried by my court. Should choose a more worthy cause, Tom, to turn us against each other.
It's not my wish. I asked you not to appoint me Archbishop.
By God's eyes, I wish I'd listened to you. How was I to know you would turn wholly on me? I thought I knew you. You should have kept my seal, Thomas.
Could the Archbishop have stood by while the Chancellor coerced the church? The two offices are incompatible.
And yet I thought you could do it. And give me credit, Thomas. I believed you would serve both offices with honor.
You misconceived the circumstance, Your Majesty.
Can a man not serve his king and God at the same time?
It would seem to depend on the king.
Or on the man. Go, my Lord of Canterbury.
Your Majesty.
I sought repose within my secret self, and I found confusion and grief in the innermost center of my being. I wanted to smile out of the very joy of my mind, and I am compelled to cry out with the groaning of my heart. I am so long a stranger to the glories of God's earth that only memory of earlier times have the magic of God's grace. And why do I think so often in my meditations of my boyhood? Lively mornings at Smithfield, a swim with Rose in the River Thames, the walls of London, the gates, Aldersgate, Bishopsgate, Cheapside, the Tower, and the bridge to the south shore over which we walked. How many times? How many times? My earthly father and my dear mother. I am so long estranged from the everyday beauties of God's boundless creation. O Holy Mary, Mother of God, neglect not wretched Thomas, thy servant. Give me a sign, O Lord. When will you think of us again and hear us again? When will you restore yourself to us? Illumine us, show us yourself.
It could have been avoided if Becket had been consistent, yes, but gentle and diplomatic. And if Henry had kept his temper and realized that he was dealing with another great man, things might have been very different.
He played a role which, in our day, in totally different circumstances, still has a sort of relevance, because he resisted tyranny as he saw it. He stood for the rights of God as he saw that. I mean, I shouldn't agree with Becket, and he must have been a most uncomfortable man to live with. But nevertheless, he represented something of the greatest importance in the consciousness of the world of his time.
I think we've got to give Henry credit for a certain amount of policy which
was more than mere acquisition of power for himself. You see, I think the great problem of his reign was a problem which is, well, one that we realize very much today. It was the problem of violence. And even though Henry himself may not have thought out the various writs which made the king's court common court for the country as a whole, he took responsibility as king. Even if his own servants were the people who invented these things, he was responsible for it.
I don't like Henry. I feel, as Bacon and his supporters felt, uneasy in his presence. Man obviously endowed with great charm, tremendous energy, very capable of using both his charm and his anger for diplomatic purposes.
The whole thing had to come to a head in persons. The problem here was the resistance of the church to the king over the things where the church itself was determined, if it could, to exercise control. Now, because of this struggle, it served the cause of freedom, not because it believed in freedom, but because it prevented the king being an absolute dictator.
And a council was called at Clarendon for January 1164, and the king made the great mistake at that council of trying to get Becket to agree to regulations which were written down. Now, so often in human history, people can get on quite well with each other, provided that the rules are not written down on paper or parchment, as the case may be. And once the rules are written down and there's no flexibility, trouble starts, and that was the case here. And Becket absolutely refused to conform to the various points that Henry put forward, the so-called Constitutions of Clarendon, the principal one of which, of course, related to the trial of criminals, priests and clerks. Becket refused to agree. Then finally, while all the bishops were supporting him, he suddenly gave way.
I remember one face, and one face only. I see that face between me and God every hour of the long day, every hour of the long night, the face of the King. Why does the face of God elude me so totally? O Holy Mary, Mother of God, I beseech thee, neglect not thy poor son, thy consecrated servant. Give me a sign, some tangible omen, even a dream, that I might know that I please thee in my ways. To walk the road I walk is to pass through the valley of death, fearing every evil, even when no evil is present. To wrestle with doubt and the darkness, though buttressed in this cloistered abbey, is a torment only to be endured by those who are strong in thy will. Why hast thou denied me all portents of thy approval? The glory of God is all around me, yet it stays mute, unuttered, unperceived by this wretched being, this dejected prelate of thy house, Thomas Becket. I sought to serve thee, O Lord, with tithe, prebend, honors, and administration, not in the devotion of self-effacement in the holy life. Purge my soul of blemish, O Lord. Give thy adoring servant thy eternal blessing in this life and in the hereafter. Give me a sign that I have served thee and may serve thee still. Tread my way in the darkness of wavering conviction and doubt. My prayers remain unrequited.
Bishop of York here?
Since dawn, sire.
Good. That won't please my Lord of Canterbury. Saving my order? Damn the man. Why is he so interminably stubborn? I've no confidence in him, Lester. None at all. He recanted those three offensive words and substituted two others. Bad enough, but words I could accept. Bona fide. I don't trust him. Wily, so swift of foot, you never know what he will do. The man's a maze of motive and intrigue. No one, not even himself, knows what he'll do next. Oh, the cunning. He recanted in closed chambers. What did it cost him? Nothing. He runs about the kingdom defying me, saving his damned order, God forgive me, and then recants in private. What can you do with such a man? Not only does he defy me behind my back, which is bad enough, but he does it to my face and before the Knight of the Realm. He contradicted me, his king, in public, injuring my royal dignity. What do you say to that?
A difficult man.
Difficult? He's an impossible man, an impossible subject, and an impossible archbishop. Speak!
Your Majesty, Archbishop Thomas of Canterbury is in attendance.
Are my barons all assembled?
Yes, sir.
The bishops?
In attendance, Your Majesty.
Announce the king.
Sire.
Leicester. The last time Thomas and I were here at Clarendon, the rogue won 1,000 marks from me in the hunt.
Sire.
Then he gave me his finest falcon, the best bird in the kingdom.
Sire.
Whenever I uncowled that bird, if Thomas were within 10 miles, the bird would find him and settle on his arm.
A difficult bird, sire. Not unlike its master.
I cured it.
Sire.
Yes, I cured it.
Sir?
I blinded it. Come. Council of our earls, dukes, barons, knights, our archbishops and our bishops, all the great men of this our realm hereby assembled in our presence this 13th day of January in the year of our Lord 1164, that we might request of them out of their love, fealty, and obedience to us, to receive this, what we shall call the Constitutions of Clarendon, a set of 16 articles which are the laws of our illustrious grandsire Henry I of England, promulgated by us by right of ancient custom, and call upon all present to observe faithfully and without reservation these constitutions. We call upon His Grace, Archbishop Thomas, Lord of Canterbury, to repeat in public statement the private submission he made to us at Woodstock, to honor and observe these constitutions of ancient custom, separately and severally.
I, Thomas, Archbishop of Canterbury, for myself, my office, and on behalf of my bishops, do hereby receive the laws of this constitution, and in good faith will observe the same and honor King Henry in all matters, saving my order and the honor of God and of the Holy Church in all respects.
Art, this is treason! I swear to you, Thomas Becket, before all present, and by the same God you invoke to defy me, the same God upon whose holy cross you swore obedience and fealty to us, your king, I swear by the eyes of that same God that my royal anger will not suffer this public affront to my dignity without recompense of the most final and exacting satisfaction.
It's treason, Your Majesty!
Your Majesty!
You said it
up. Your Majesty! Your Majesty, I but beg to be heard.
The king has heard too much, Archbishop.
Arons, escort the Archbishop and his retinue to the chamber, that they might consider the consequences of saving their order.
Who? Unhand me.
It's us enough. The Archbishop will retire to chambers. Thomas Becket, you reneged on your private word to me in public. I command you to return yourself the compliment.
We will stand firm. We defend the rights of God.
Fitzurse drew his sword. They will kill us, I know. I've opposed the king before.
William of Norwich, have faith. The Lord will protect us.
Oh, you know that, Your Grace, and we know it. But does Henry know it?
Bishop Robert is right. The king knows one thing better than any other. The power of the sword.
Speaking as one who defied the king, and you, Your Grace, when you were Chancellor, in the matter of royal prerogative over Battle Abbey, or have you forgotten that little incident?
Oh, do spare us and His Grace your
reminiscences,
Hilary.
I was about to say that the king practices a strategy of confronting a bishop defending the Lord's interests and deviously subtracting the Lord from the argument, which leaves the bishop high and dry on the shores of personal defiance to his sovereign.
These constitutions amount to heresy. If we could get the matter before the Pope ahead of the king's
but
agents...
How? The Pope's there and we're here. And don't forget there are two popes in the bush and none in the hand.
The appropriateness of your wit leaves something to be desired, Robert of Lincoln.
The king has the sword, but we have the ultimate weapon.
The Pope would never use it.
Which Pope? If one of them proclaimed the interdict and excommunication, Henry would recognize the other.
Whatever happens, we must stand firm. It would not be entirely unheard of should it befall us to die for the laws of the church. It's been done before. A host of saints and martyrs...
We were shut in a small chamber for 3 days. On the third day, the chiefs and nobles of the realm, at the height of their rage, burst in upon the conclave in which we sat. "Hear this, you who despise the laws of the kingdom," their leader shouted, brandishing his fist. "Know that these hands, these arms, these bodies are not ours, but our Lord King's, and they are ready at a nod to avenge his wrongs and follow his will, whatever it should be. Think well, priests, before you defy our Lord any more. Yield to his commands before you bear the brunt of his rage through the arms of us, his loyal knights." God saw who fled, who yielded in terror before the outrage, I tell you it was not Henry of Winchester, nor Nigel of Ely, nor Robert of Lincoln, nor Hilary of Chichester. All these and ourself stood firm. It was the head of our chivalry who reneged yet again. Our noble captain, Canterbury himself. My Lord Canterbury sequestered himself from the council of his brothers, then returned to us with his decision. It is the Lord's will that I forswear myself. I submit and will do penance for my perjury. We, his brothers, were struck as by thunder at this fall from constancy and virtue of our spiritual father himself.
We stand plaintive to his good faith, prudence, and clemency, confident that our order will not be traduced by our sovereign. I, Thomas, Lord of Canterbury, declare I will observe the ancient customs of the kingdom in good faith.
We hear with pleasure my Lord of Canterbury's submission, and ask all gathered here to stand witness. Your bishops, my lord, do you command them?
I wish them to satisfy the king's honor.
Then they must do so. Do you accept the constitutions of these ancient customs as set down?
I, Follett, Bishop of London, swear that I will honor these ancient customs of the land as set down in these constitutions in good faith.
I, Robert, Bishop of Lincoln, swear that I will honor the constitutions of Clarendon in good faith.
I, Hilary of Chichester, swear that I will honor these ancient customs of the kingdom in good faith.
I, William of Norwich, swear that I will honor these ancient customs of the kingdom in good faith.
Almost 6 years, and still I tremble with anger, which, unassuaged, turns to fear. Could I put my head quietly and bravely on the block, or would my unruly blood boil to anger and from thence to unbecoming violence? Holy Mary, Mother of God, strengthen my love that it might tame outrageous impulse and unseat the devil within me.
During the summer of 1164, Becket was in dire danger, or considered himself in dire danger, and made at least two efforts to escape from the country. And late in the year, another meeting was called at Northampton to charge Becket with offences under feudal law. There was a case of a man called John the Marshal. It seems pretty obvious that the king was intending to get Becket.
Henry then failed by trying to break Becket. Once the clash had come, and once the king had dug his feet in, Becket couldn't do anything else but harden on the other side. It was the irresistible force meeting the immovable mass, with the inevitable consequence, as one used to be told as a boy, of the inconceivable smash.
And things worked out much as the king wanted. He became quite vicious as time went on, making all sorts of impossible demands for enormous sums of money, which Becket had very properly expended in the royal service in the days when he was chancellor.
It was not historically a confrontation between common law and canon law, but between a king trying to get all power in his hands and an archbishop resisting that.
You can sense the mounting crisis in October in 1164. Becket, refusing to be judged, the Earl of Leicester was actually in process of delivering a judgment against him. Becket refused to be judged, stalked out through the castle hall, exchanging violent pleasantries with some of the barons. And there you can see the burgess's son, the man from the city of London, all on the defensive against these barons and knights.
Must I relive these humiliations, O God?
could I not be spared the torment of humble recollection of vanities, frailties, and failure to do thy will and justify my appointment in thy service? What a sorry plight for an archbishop to own. A canker of hate, failure, pride, and anger eating within, despite the remedies of outward piety, penance, and prayer. Is there no remedy, God? No redemptive act drastic enough to warrant atonement? Peace.